you to do some hard thinking, and then you can go back to your boss. The finger nodded its head stiffly, but did not exert its limited brain power on speech. Now, on four occasions recently, Powell said, your boss deviated from brain scheme. Do you remember those occasions?
Yes, sir.
Donovan growled angrily. He remembers. I tell you, there is something very sinister. Oh, go bash your skull. Of course the finger remembers. There is nothing wrong with him. Powell turned back to the robot. What were you doing each time? I mean, the whole group. The finger had a curious air of reciting by rote, as if he answered questions by the mechanical pressure of his brain pan, but without any enthusiasm whatever. He said, the first time we were at work on a difficult outcropping in Tunnel 17, Level B. The second time we were buttressing the roof against a possible cave-in. The third time we were preparing accurate blasts in order to tunnel farther without breaking into a subterranean fissure. The fourth time was just after a minor cave-in.
What happened at these times?
It is difficult to describe. An order would be issued, but before we could receive and interpret it, a new order came to march in queer formation.
Powell snapped out, why?
I don't know.
Donovan broke in tensely. What was the first order? The one that was superseded by the marching directions?
I don't know.
I sensed that an order was sent, but there was never time to receive it. Could you tell us anything about it? Was it the same order each time?
The finger shook his head unhappily. I don't know.
Powell leaned back. All right, get back to your boss.
The finger left, with visible relief.
Donovan said, well, we accomplished a lot that time. That was real sharp dialogue all the way through. Listen, Dave and that imbecile finger are both holding out on us. There is too much they don't know and don't remember. We've got to stop trusting them, Greg.
Powell brushed his mustache the wrong way.
So help me, Mike, another fool remark out of you, and I'll take away your rattle and teething ring.
All right. You're the genius of the team. I'm just a poor sucker. Where do we stand?
Right behind the eight ball. I tried to work it backward through the finger and couldn't. So we've got to work it forward.
A great man, marveled Donovan. How simple that makes it. Now translate that into English, Master.
Translating it into baby talk would suit you better. I mean that we've got to find out what order it is that Dave gives just before everything goes black. It would be the key to the business.
And how do you expect to do that? We can't get close to him because nothing will go wrong as long as we are there. We can't catch the orders by radio because they are transmitted via this positronic field. That eliminates the close range and the long range method, leaving us a neat, cozy zero.
By direct observation, yes. There's still deduction.
Huh?
We're going on shifts, Mike.
Powell smiled grimly.
And we are not taking our eyes off the visiplate. We're going to watch every action of those steel headaches. When they go off into their act, we're going to see what happened immediately before, and we're going to deduce the order.
Donovan opened his mouth and left it that way for a full minute. Then he said in strangled tones, I resign. I quit.
You have 10 days to think up something better, said Powell wearily.
Which for 8 days Donovan tried mightily to do. For 8 days on alternate 4-hour shifts, he watched with aching and bleary eyes those glinty metallic forms move against the vague background. And for 8 days in the 4-hour in-betweens, he cursed the United States robots, the DV models, and the day he was born. And then on the 8th day, when Powell entered with an aching head and sleepy eyes for his shift, Donovan stood up and with very careful and deliberate aim launched a heavy bookend for the exact center of the visiplate. There was a very appropriate splintering noise. Powell gasped, What did you do that for?
Because, said Donovan, almost calmly, I'm not watching it anymore.
We've got 2 days left, and we haven't found out a thing. DB5 is a lousy loss. He's stopped 5 times since I've been watching and 3 times on your shift, and I can't make out what orders he gave, and you couldn't make it out. And I don't believe you could ever make it out, because I know I couldn't ever. Jumping space. How can you watch 6 robots at the same time? One makes with the hands, and one with the feet, and one like a windmill, and another is jumping up and down like a maniac. And the other two, devil knows what they are doing. And then they all stop. So. Greg, we're not doing it right. We got to get up close. We've got to watch what they're doing from where we can see the details. Powell broke a bitter silence. Yeah, and wait for something to go wrong with only 2 days to go. Is it any better watching from here? It's more comfortable. Ah, but there's something you can do there that you can't do here. What's that? You can make them stop at whatever time you choose, and while you're prepared and watching to see what goes wrong. Powell startled into alertness. How's that? Well, figure it out yourself. You're the brains, you say. Ask yourself some questions. When does DB5 go out of whack? When did that finger say he did? When a cave-in threatened or actually occurred? When delicately measured explosives were being laid down? When a difficult seam was hit? In other words, during emergencies, Powell was excited. Right. When did you expect it to happen? It's the personal initiative factor that's giving us the trouble. And it's just during emergencies, in the absence of a human being, that personal initiative is most strained. Now what is the logical deduction? How can we create our own stoppage when and where we want it? He paused triumphantly. He was beginning to enjoy his role, and answered his own question to forestall the obvious answer on Powell's tongue. By creating our own emergency. Powell said, Mike, you're right. Thanks, pal. I knew I'd do it someday. All right, and skip the sarcasm. We'll save it for Earth and preserve it in jars for future long, cold winters. Meanwhile, what emergency can we create? We could flood the mines if this weren't an airless asteroid. A witticism, no doubt, said Powell. Really, Mike, you'll incapacitate me with laughter. What about a mild cave-in? Donovan pursed his lips and said, Okay by me. Good. Let's get started. Powell felt uncommonly like a conspirator as he wound his way over the craggy landscape. His subgravity walk teetered across the broken ground, kicking rocks to right and left under his weight in noiseless puffs of gray dust. Mentally, though, it was the cautious crawl of the plotter. He said, Do you know where they are? I think so, Greg. All right, Powell said gloomily. But if any finger gets within 20 feet of us, we'll be sensed whether we are in the line of sight or not. I hope you know that. When I need an elementary course in robotics, I'll file an application with you formally and in triplicate. Down through here. They were in the tunnels now. Even the starlight was gone. The two hugged the walls, flashes flickering out the way in intermittent bursts. Powell felt for the security of his detonator. Do you know this tunnel, Mike? Not so good. It's a new one. I think I can make it out from what I saw in the visiplate, though. Interminable minutes passed, and then Mike said, Feel that. There was a slight vibration thrumming the wall against the fingers of Powell's metal-encased hand. There was no sound, naturally. Blasting. We're pretty close. Keep your eyes open, said Powell. Donovan nodded impatiently. It was upon them and gone before they could seize themselves, just a bronze glint across the field of vision. They clung together in silence. Powell whispered, Think it sensed us? Hope not. But we'd better flank them. Take the first side tunnel to the right. Suppose we miss them altogether. Well, what do you want to do? Go back? Donovan grunted fiercely. They're within a quarter of a mile. I was watching them through the visiplate, wasn't I? And we've got 2 days.
Oh, shut up. You're wasting your oxygen. Is this a side passage here?
The flash flicked.
It is. Let's go.
The vibration was considerably more marked, and the ground below shuddered uneasily.
This is good, said Donovan, if it doesn't give out on us, though.
He flung his light ahead anxiously. They could touch the roof of the tunnel with a half-upstretched hand, and the bracings had been newly placed.
Donovan hesitated.
Dead end. Let's go back.
No. Hold on.
Powell squeezed clumsily past.
Is that light ahead?
Light? I don't see any.
Where would there be light down here?
Robot light.
He was scrambling up a gentle incline on hands and knees. His voice was hoarse and anxious in Donovan's ears.
Hey, Mike, come up here.
There was light. Donovan crawled up and over Powell's outstretched legs.
An opening?
Yes.
They must be working into this tunnel from the other side now,
I think.
Donovan felt the ragged edges of the opening that looked out into what the cautious flashlight showed to be a larger and obviously main-stem tunnel. The hole was too small for a man to go through, almost too small for two men to look through simultaneously.
There's nothing there, said Donovan.
Well, not now.
But there must have been a second ago or we wouldn't have seen light.
Watch out!
The walls rolled about them and they felt the impact. A fine dust showered down. Powell lifted a cautious head and looked again.
All right, Mike. They're there.
The glittering robots clustered 50 feet down the main stem. Metal arms labored mightily at the rubbish heap brought down by the last blast. Donovan urged eagerly, "Don't waste time. It won't be long before they get through, and the next blast may get us. For Pete's sake, don't rush me."
Powell unlimbered the detonator, and his eyes searched anxiously across the dusky background, where the only light was robot light, and it was impossible to tell a projecting boulder from a shadow.
"There's a spot in the roof. See it? Almost over them. The last blast didn't quite get it. If you can get it at the base, half the roof will cave in."
Powell followed the dim finger.
"Check. Now fasten your eye on the robots and pray they don't move too far from that part of the tunnel. They're my light sources. Are all 7 there?"
Donovan counted.
"All 7.
"Well, then, watch them. Watch every motion." His detonator was lifted and remained poised while Donovan watched and cursed and blinked the sweat out of his eye. It flashed. There was a jar, a series of hard vibrations, and then a jarring thump that threw Powell heavily against Donovan. Donovan yowled,
"Greg, you threw me off. I didn't see a thing."
Powell stared about wildly.
"Where are they?"
Donovan fell into a stupid silence. There was no sign of the robots. It was dark as the depths of the River Styx.
"Think we buried them?" quavered Donovan.
"Let's get down there. Don't ask me what I think."
Powell crawled backward at tumbling speed.
"Mike!"
Donovan paused in the act of following.
"What's wrong now?"
"Hold on."
Powell's breathing was rough and irregular in Donovan's ears.
"Mike! Do you hear me, Mike?"
"I'm right here. What is it?"
"We're blocked in. It wasn't the ceiling coming down 50 feet away that knocked us over. It was our own ceiling. The shocks tumbled it."
"What?"
Donovan scrambled up against a hard barrier.
"Turn on the flash."
Powell did so. At no point was there room for a rabbit to squeeze through. Donovan said softly,
"Well, what do you know?"
They wasted a few moments and some muscular power in an effort to move the blocking barrier. Powell varied this by wrenching at the edges of the original hole. For a moment, Powell lifted his blaster. But in those close quarters, a flash would be suicide, and he knew it. He sat down.
"You know, Mike," he said, "we've really messed this up. We are no nearer finding out what's wrong with Dave. It was a good idea, but it blew up in our face."
Donovan's glance was bitter with an intensity totally wasted on the darkness. I hate to disturb you, old man, but quite apart from what we know or don't know of Dave, we're slightly trapped. If we don't get loose, fella, we're going to die. D-I-E, die. How much oxygen have we, anyway? Not more than 6 hours.
I've thought of that.
Powell's fingers went up to his long, suffering mustache and clanged uselessly against the transparent visor. Of course, we could get Dave to dig us out easily in that time, except that our precious emergency must have thrown him off, and his radio circuit is out.
And isn't that nice?
Donovan edged up to the opening and managed to get his metal-encased head out. It was an extremely tight fit.
Hey, Greg.
What?
Suppose we get Dave within 20 feet. He'll snap to normal. That will save us.
Sure, but where is he?
Down the corridor. Way down.
For Pete's sake, stop pulling before you drag my head out of its socket. I'll give you a chance to look.
Powell maneuvered his head outside.
We did it all right. Look at those saps. That must be a ballet they're doing.
Never mind the side remarks. Are they getting any closer?
Can't tell yet. They're too far away. Give me a chance. Pass me my flash, will you? I'll try to attract their attention that way.
He gave up after 2 minutes.
Not a chance. They must be blind.
Uh-oh. They're starting toward us.
What do you know?
Donovan said, hey, let me see.
There was a silent scuffle.
Powell said, all right, and Donovan got his head out.
They were approaching.
Dave was high-stepping the way in front, and the six fingers were a weaving chorus line behind him.
Donovan marveled. What are they doing?
That's what I want to know. It looks like the Virginia Reel. And Dave's a major domo, or I never saw one.
Oh, leave me alone with your descriptions, grumbled Powell. How near are they?
Within 50 feet and coming this way. We'll be out in 15 minutes.
Hey!
What's going on?
It took Powell several seconds to recover from his stunned astonishment at Donovan's vocal gyrations.
Come on, give me a chance at that hole. Don't be a hog about it.
He fought his way upward, but Donovan kicked wildly.
They didn't about face, Greg. They're leaving. Dave! Hey, Dave!
Powell shrieked. What's the use of that, you fool? Sound won't carry.
Well then, panted Donovan, kick the walls. Slam them. Get some vibration started. We've got to attract their attention somehow, Greg, or we're through.
He pounded like a madman.
Powell shook him. Wait, Mike, wait. Listen, I've got an idea. Jumping Jupiter, this is a fine time to get around to the simple solutions. Mike!
What do you want?
Donovan pulled his head in.
Let me in there fast before they get out of range.
Out of range? What are you going to do?
Hey, what are you going to do with that detonator?
He grabbed Powell's arm.
Powell shook off the grip violently.
I'm going to do a little shooting.
Why?
That's for later. Let's see if it works first. If it doesn't, then get out of the way and let me shoot.
The robots were flickers, small and getting smaller in the distance.
Powell lined up the sights tensely and pulled the trigger 3 times. He lowered the guns and peered anxiously.
One of the subsidiaries was down.
There were only 6 gleaming figures now.
Powell called into his transmitter uncertainly.
Dave.
A pause. Then the answer sounded to both men.
Boss? Where are you?
My 3rd subsidiary has had his chest blown in. He's out of commission.
Never mind your subsidiary, said Powell. We're trapped in a cave-in where you were blasting. Can you see our flashlight?
Sure. We'll be right there.
Powell sat back and relaxed.
That, my friend, is that.
Donovan said very softly with tears in his voice,
All right, Greg. You win.
I beat my forehead against the ground before your feet. Now don't feed me any bull. Just tell me quietly what it's all about.
Easy. It's just that all through we missed the obvious, as usual. We knew it was the personal initiative circuit and that it always happened during emergencies, but we kept looking for a specific order as the cause. Why should it be an order?
Why not?
Well, look. Why not a type of order? What type of order requires the most initiative? What type of order would occur almost always only in an emergency?
Don't ask me, Greg. Tell me.
I'm doing it. It's the six-way order. Under all ordinary conditions, one or more of the fingers would be doing routine tasks requiring no close supervision. In the sort of offhand way, our bodies handle the routine walking motions. But in an emergency, all six subsidiaries must be mobilized immediately and simultaneously. Dave must handle six robots at a time, and something gives. The rest was easy. Any decrease in initiative required, such as the arrival of humans, snaps him back. So I destroyed one of the robots. When I did, he was transmitting only five-way orders. Initiative decreases. He's normal.
How did you get all that? Demanded Donovan.
Just logical guessing. I tried it, and it worked. The robot's voice was in their ears again. Here I am. Can you hold out half an hour?
Easy, said Powell.
Then, to Donovan, he continued, And now the job should be simple. We'll go through the circuits and check off each part that gets an extra workout in a six-way order as against a five-way. How big a field does that leave us?
Donovan considered.
Not much, I think. If Dave is like the preliminary model we saw back at the factory, there's a special coordinating circuit that would be the only section involved.
He cheered up suddenly and amazingly.
Say, that wouldn't be bad at all. There's nothing to that.
All right. You think it over and we'll check the blueprints when we get back.
And now, till Dave reaches us, I'm relaxing.
Hey, wait. Just tell me one thing.
What were those queer, shifting marches, those funny dance steps that the robots went through every time they went screwy?
That?
I don't know. But I've got a notion. Remember, those subsidiaries were Dave's fingers. We were always saying that, you know. Well, it's my idea that in all these interludes, whenever Dave became a psychiatric case, he went off into a moronic maze, spending his time twiddling his fingers.
Susan Calvin talked about Powell and Donovan with unsmiling amusement, but warmth came into her voice when she mentioned robots. It didn't take her long to go through the Speedies, the Cuties, and the Daves, and I stopped her. Otherwise, she would have dredged up half a dozen more. I said, Doesn't anything ever happen on Earth? She looked at me with a little frown.
No, we don't have much to do with robots in action here on Earth.
Oh. Well, that's too bad. I mean, your field engineers are swell, but can't we get you into this? Didn't you ever have a robot go wrong on you? It's your anniversary, you know.
And so help me, she blushed. She said, Robots have gone wrong on me. Heavens, how long it's been since I thought of it. Why, it was almost 40 years ago.
Certainly.
2021. And I was only 38. Oh, my. I'd rather not talk about it. I waited, and sure enough, she changed her mind.
Why not? She said.
It cannot harm me now.
Even the memory can't.
I was foolish once, young man. Would you believe that?
No, I said.
I was. But Herbie was a mind-reading robot.
What?
Only one of its kind, before or since. A mistake. Somewheres.
Liar.
Alfred Lanning lit his cigar carefully, but the tips of his fingers were trembling slightly. his gray eyebrows hunched low as he spoke between puffs.
It reads minds all right. Damn little doubt about that. But why?
He looked at mathematician Peter Bogart.
Well?
Bogart flattened his black hair down with both hands.
That was the 34th RB model we've turned out, Lanning. All the others were strictly orthodox.
The third man at the table frowned. Milton Ash was the youngest officer of U.S. Robot and Mechanical Men Incorporated, and proud of his post.
Listen, Bogart, there wasn't a hitch in the assembly from start to finish. I guarantee that.
Bogart's thick lips spread in a patronizing smile.
Do you? If you can answer for the entire assembly line, I recommend your promotion. By exact count, there are 75,234 operations necessary for the manufacture of a single positronic brain, each separate operation depending for successful completion upon any number of factors, from 5 to 105. If any one of them goes seriously wrong, the brain is ruined. I quote our own information folder, Ash.
Milton Ash flushed, but a fourth voice cut off his reply.
If we're going to start by trying to fix the blame on one another, I'm leaving.
Susan Calvin's hands were folded tightly in her lap, and the little lines about her thin, pale lips deepened.
We've got a mind-reading robot on our hands, and it strikes me as rather important that we find out just why it reads minds. We're not going to do that by saying your fault, my fault.
Her cold gray eyes fastened upon Ash, and he grinned.
Lanning grinned too, and, as always at such times, his long white hair and shrewd little eyes made him the picture of a biblical patriarch.
True for you, Dr. Calvin.
His voice became suddenly crisp.
Here's everything in pill concentrate form. We've produced a positronic brain of supposedly ordinary vintage that's got the remarkable property of being able to tune in on thought waves. It would mark the most important advance in robotics in decades if we knew how it happened. We don't, and we have to find out. Is that clear?
May I make a suggestion? Asked Bogart.
Go ahead. I'd say that until we do figure out the mess, and as a mathematician I expect it to be a very devil of a mess, we keep the existence of RD-34 a secret. I mean, even from the other members of the staff. As heads of the departments, we ought not to find it an insoluble problem, and the fewer know about it.
Bogart is right, said Dr. Calvin. Ever since the Interplanetary Code was modified to allow robot models to be tested in the plants before being shipped out to space, anti-robot propaganda has increased. If any word leaks out about a robot being able to read minds before we can announce complete control of the phenomenon, pretty effective capital could be made out of it.
Lanning sucked at his cigar and nodded gravely. He turned to Ash. I think you said you were alone when you first stumbled on this thought-reading business.
I'll say I was alone. I got the scare of my life.
RB-34 had just been taken off the assembly table, and they sent him down to me. Oberman was off somewheres, so I took him down to the testing rooms myself. At least I started to take him down.
Ash paused, and a tiny smile tugged at his lips.
Say, did any of you ever carry on a thought conversation without knowing it?
No one bothered to answer, and he continued, You don't realize it at first, you know.
He just spoke to me, as logically and sensibly as you can imagine. And it was only when I was most of the way down to the testing rooms that I realized that I hadn't said anything. Sure, I thought lots, but that isn't the same thing, is it? I locked that thing up and ran for Lanning. Having it walking beside me, calmly peering into my thoughts and picking and choosing among them, gave me the willies.
I imagine it would, said
Susan Calvin thoughtfully. Her eyes fixed themselves upon Ash in an oddly intent manner.
We are so accustomed to considering our own thoughts private.
Lanning broke in impatiently. Then only the four of us know. All right. We've got to go about this systematically. Ash, I want you to check over the assembly line from beginning to end. Everything, You're to eliminate all operations in which there was no possible chance of an error, and list all those where there were, together with its nature and possible magnitude.
Tall order, grunted Ash.
Naturally. Of course, you're to put the men under you to work on this. Every single one if you have to, and I don't care if we go behind schedule either. But they're not to know why, you understand.
Yes, the young technician grinned wryly. It's still a lulu of a job.
Lanning swiveled about in his chair and faced Calvin. You'll have to tackle the job from the other direction. You're the robo-psychologist of the plant, so you're to study the robot itself and work backward. Try to find out how he ticks. See what else is tied up with his telepathic powers, how far they extend, how they warp his outlook, and just exactly what harm it has done to his ordinary RB properties. You've got that?
Lanning didn't wait for Dr. Calvin to answer.
I'll coordinate the work and interpret the findings mathematically.
He puffed violently at his cigar and mumbled the rest through the smoke.
Bogart will help me there, of course.
Bogart polished the nails of one pudgy hand with the other and said blandly, I dare say. I know a little in the line.
Well, I'll get started.
Ash shoved his chair back and rose. His pleasantly youthful face crinkled in a grin.
I've got the darndest job of any of us, so I'm getting out of here and to work.
He left with a slurred, be seeing ya.
Susan Calvin answered with a barely perceptible nod, but her eyes followed him out of sight, and she did not answer when Lanning grunted and said, Do you want to go up and see RB-34 now, Dr. Calvin?
RB-34's photoelectric eyes lifted from the book at the muffled sound of hinges turning, and he was upon his feet when Susan Calvin entered. She paused to readjust the huge no-entrance sign upon the door and then approached the robot.
I've brought you the texts upon hyperatomic motors, Herbie. A few, anyway. Would you care to look at them?
RB-34, otherwise known as Herbie, lifted the three heavy books from her arms and opened to the title page of one.
Theory of Hyperatomics.
He mumbled inarticulately to himself as he flipped the pages and then spoke with an abstracted air.
Sit down, Dr. Calvin. This will take me a few minutes.
The psychologist seated herself and watched Herbie narrowly as he took a chair at the other side of the table and went through the three books systematically. At the end of half an hour, he put them down.
Of course, I know why you brought these.
The corner of Dr. Calvin's lip twitched.
I was afraid you would.
It's difficult to work with you, Herbie. You're always a step ahead of me.
It's the same with these books, you know, as with the others. They just don't interest me.
There's nothing to your textbooks. Your science is just a mass of collected data plastered together by makeshift theory, and all so incredibly simple that it's scarcely worth bothering about. It's your fiction that interests me, your studies of the interplay of human motives and emotions.
His mighty hand gestured vaguely as he sought the proper words.
Dr. Calvin whispered, I think I understand.
I see into minds, you see, the robot continued, and you have no idea how complicated they are. I can't begin to understand everything because my own mind has so little in common with them. But I try, and your novels help.
Yes, but I'm afraid that after going through some of the harrowing emotional experiences of our present-day sentimental novel, there was a tinge of bitterness in her voice. You find real minds like ours dull and colorless.
But I don't.
The sudden energy in the response brought the other to her feet. She felt herself reddening and thought wildly,
He must know.
Herbie subsided suddenly and muttered in a low voice from which the metallic timbre departed almost entirely.
But of course I know about it, Dr. Calvin. You think of it always. So how can I help but know?
Her face was hard.
Have you told anyone?
Of course not. This with genuine surprise. No one has asked me.
Well then, she flung out, I suppose you think I am a fool.
No, it is a normal emotion.
Perhaps that is why it is so foolish. The wistfulness in her voice drowned out everything else. Some of the woman peered through the layer of doctorhood. I am not what you would call attractive.
If you are referring to mere physical attraction, I couldn't judge. But I know, in any case, that there are other types of attraction.
Nor young. Dr. Calvin had scarcely heard the robot.
You are not yet 40.
An anxious insistence had crept into Herbie's voice. 38, as you count the years. A shriveled 60 as far as my emotional outlook on life is concerned. Am I a psychologist for nothing? She drove on with bitter breathlessness. And he's barely 35 and looks and acts younger. Do you suppose he ever sees me as anything but what I am? You are wrong. Herbie's steel fist struck the plastic-topped table with strident clang. Listen to me. But Susan Calvin whirled on him now, and the hunted pain in her eyes became ablaze. Why should I? What do you know about it all, anyway, you machine? I'm just a specimen to you. An interesting bug with a peculiar mind spread-eagled for inspection. It's a wonderful example of frustration, isn't it? Almost as good as your books. Her voice, emerging in dry sobs, choked into silence. The robot cowered at the outburst. He shook his head pleadingly. Won't you listen to me, please? I could help you, if you would let me. How? Her lips curled. By giving me good advice? No, not that. It's just that I know what other people think. Milton Ashe, for instance. There was a long silence, and Susan Calvin's eyes dropped. I don't want to know what he thinks, she gasped. Keep quiet. I think you would want to know what he thinks. Her head remained bent, but her breath came more quickly. You are talking nonsense, she whispered. Why should I? I am trying to help. Milton Ashe's thoughts of you. He paused. And then the psychologist raised her head. Well? The robot said quietly. He loves you. For a full minute, Dr. Calvin did not speak. She merely stared. Then, you are mistaken. You must be. Why should he? But he does. A thing like that cannot be hidden. Not from me. But I am so... She stammered to a halt. He looks deeper than the skin and admires intellect in others. Milton Ashe is not the type to marry a head of hair and a pair of eyes. Susan Calvin found herself blinking rapidly and waited before speaking. Even then her voice trembled. Yet he certainly never in any way indicated... Have you ever given him a chance? How could I? I never thought that... Exactly. The psychologist paused in thought and then looked up suddenly. A girl visited him here at the plant half a year ago. She was pretty, I suppose, blonde and slim, and, of course, could scarcely add two and two. He spent all day puffing out his chest, trying to explain how a robot was put together. The hardness had returned. Not that she understood. Who was she? Herbie answered without hesitation, I know the person you are referring to. She is his first cousin, and there is no romantic interest there, I assure you. Susan Calvin rose to her feet with a vivacity almost girlish. Oh, isn't that strange? That's exactly what I used to pretend to myself sometimes, though I never really thought so. Then it all must be true. She ran to Herbie and seized his cold, heavy hand in both hers.
Thank you, Herbie.
Her voice was an urgent, husky whisper. Don't tell anyone about this. Let it be our secret. And thank you again. With that, and a convulsive squeeze of Herbie's unresponsive metal fingers, she left. Herbie turned slowly to his neglected novel, but there was no one to read his thoughts. Milton Ash stretched slowly and magnificently to the tune of cracking joints and a chorus of grunts, and then glared at Peter Bogart, Ph.D. Say, he said, I've been at this for a week now with just about no sleep. How long do I have to keep it up? I thought you said the positronic bombardment in vac chamber D was the solution. Bogart yawned delicately and regarded his white hands with interest. It is. I'm on the track. I know what that means when a mathematician says it. How near the end are you? It all depends. On what? Ash dropped into a chair and stretched his long legs out before him. On Lanning. The old fellow disagrees with me. He sighed. A bit behind the times, that's the trouble with him. He clings to matrix mechanics as the all in all, and this problem calls for more powerful mathematical tools. He's so stubborn. Ash muttered sleepily, Why not ask Herbie and settle the whole affair? Ask the robot? Bogart's eyebrows climbed. Why not? Didn't the old girl tell you? You mean Calvin? Yeah, Susie herself. That robot's a mathematical whiz. He knows all about everything, plus a bit on the side. He does triple integrals in his head and eats up tensor analysis for dessert. The mathematician stared skeptically. Are you serious? So help me. The catch is that the dope doesn't like math. He would rather read slushy novels. Honest. You should see the tripe Susie keeps feeding him. Purple Passion and Love in Space. Dr. Calvin hasn't said a word of this to us. Well, she hasn't finished studying him. You know how she is. She likes to have everything just so before letting out the big secret. She's told you. We sort of got to talking. I have been seeing a lot of her lately. He opened his eyes wide and frowned. Say, Bogey, have you been noticing anything queer about the lady lately? Bogart relaxed into an undignified grin. She's using lipstick, if that's what you mean. Hell, I know that. Rouge, powder, and eyeshadow, too. She's a sight. But it's not that. I can't put my finger on it. It's the way she talks. As if she were happy about something. He thought a little, and then shrugged. The other allowed himself a leer, which, for a scientist past 50, was not a bad job. Maybe she's in love. Ash allowed his eyes to close again. You're nuts, Bogey. You go speak to Herbie. I want to stay here and go to sleep. Right. Not that I particularly like having a robot tell me my job, nor that I think he can do it. A soft snore was his only answer. Herbie listened carefully as Peter Bogart, hands in pockets, spoke with elaborate indifference. So there you are. I've been told you understand these things, and I am asking you more in curiosity than anything else. My line of reasoning, as I have outlined it, involves a few doubtful steps, I admit, which Dr. Lanning refuses to accept, and the picture is still rather incomplete. The robot didn't answer, and Bogart said, Well? I see no mistake. Herbie studied the scribbled figures. I don't suppose you can go any further than that. I daren't try. You are a better mathematician than I, and, well, I'd hate to commit myself. There was a shade of complacency in Bogart's smile. I rather thought that would be the case. It is deep. We'll forget it. He crumpled the sheets, tossed them down the waste shaft, turned to leave, and then thought better of it. By the way, the robot waited.
Bogart seemed to have difficulty.
There is something. That is, perhaps you can...
He stopped. Herbie spoke quietly.
Your thoughts are confused, but there is no doubt at all that they concern Dr. Lanning. It is silly to hesitate, for as soon as you compose yourself, I'll know what it is you want to ask.
The mathematician's hand went to his sleek hair in the familiar smoothing gesture.
Lanning is nudging 70, he said, as if that explained everything.
I know that.
And he's been director of the plant for almost 30 years.
Herbie nodded.
Well, now, Bogart's voice became ingratiating. You would know whether he's thinking of resigning. Health, perhaps, or some other.
Quite, said Herbie,
and that was all. Well, do you know?
Certainly.
Then, could you tell me?
Since you ask, yes.
The robot was quite matter-of-fact about it. He has already resigned.
What?
The exclamation was an explosive, almost inarticulate sound. The scientist's large head hunched forward.
Say that again.
He has already resigned,
came the quiet repetition. But it has not yet taken effect. He is waiting, you see, to solve the problem of... myself.
That finished, he is quite ready to turn the office of director over to his successor.
Bogart expelled his breath sharply.
And this successor, who is he?
He was quite close to Herbie now, eyes fixed fascinatedly on those unreadable dull red photoelectric cells that were the robot's eyes.
Words came slowly. You are the next director.
And Bogart relaxed into a tight smile. This is good to know. I've been hoping and waiting for this. Thanks, Herbie.
Peter Bogart was at his desk until 5 that morning, and he was back at 9. The shelf just over the desk emptied of its row of reference books and tables as he referred to one after the other. The pages of calculations before him increased microscopically, and the crumpled sheets at his feet mounted into a hill of scribbled paper. At precisely noon, he stared at the final page, rubbed a bloodshot eye, yawned, and shrugged.
This is getting worse each minute. Damn!
He turned at the sound of the opening door and nodded at Lanning, who entered, cracking the knuckles of one gnarled hand with the other. The director took in the disorder of the room and his eyebrows furrowed together.
New lead?
He asked.
No,
came the defiant answer. What's wrong with the old one? Lanning did not trouble to answer, nor to do more than bestow a single cursory glance at the top sheet upon Bogart's desk. He spoke through the flare of a match as he lit a cigar.
Has Calvin told you about the robot? It's a mathematical genius. Really remarkable.
The other snorted loudly.
So I've heard. But Calvin had better stick to robo-psychology. I've checked Herbie on math, and he can scarcely struggle through calculus.
Calvin didn't find it so.
She's crazy.
And I don't find it so. The director's eyes narrowed dangerously.
You.
Bogart's voice hardened.
What are you talking about?
I've been putting Herbie through his paces all morning, and he can do tricks you never heard of.
Is that so?
You sound skeptical. Lanning flipped a sheet of paper out of his vest pocket and unfolded it.
That's not my handwriting, is it?
Bogart studied the large, angular notation covering the sheet.
Herbie did this.
Right. And if you'll notice, he's been working on your time integration of equation 22. It comes, Lanning tapped a yellow fingernail upon the last step, to the identical conclusion I did, and in a quarter the time. You had no right to neglect the Langer effect in positronic bombardment.
I didn't neglect it,
For heaven's sake, Lanning, get it through your head that it would cancel out...
Oh, sure, you explained that. You used the Mitchell translation equation, didn't you? Well, it doesn't apply.
Why not?
Because you've been using hyper-imaginaries, for one thing.
What's that to do with?
Mitchell's equation won't hold when...
Are you crazy? If you'll reread Mitchell's original paper in the Transactions of the Far...
I don't have to. I told you in the beginning that I didn't like his reasoning, and Herbie backs me in that.
Well then, Bogart shouted, let that clockwork contraption solve the entire problem for you. Why bother with non-essentials?
That's exactly the point. Herbie can't solve the problem. And if he can't, we can't. Alone.
I'm submitting the entire question to the National Board. It's gotten beyond us. Bogart's chair went over backward as he jumped up a snarl, face crimson. You're doing nothing of the sort.
Lanning flushed in his turn.
Are you telling me what I can't do?
Exactly, was the gridded response. I've got the problem beaten, and you're not to take it out of my hands, understand? Don't think I don't see through you, you desiccated fossil. You'd cut your own nose off before you'd let me get the credit for solving robotic telepathy.
You're a damned idiot, Bogart, and in one second I'll have you suspended for insubordination.
Lanning's lower lip trembled with passion.
Which is one thing you won't do, Lanning. You haven't any secrets with a mind-reading robot around, so don't forget that I know all about your resignation.
The ash on Lanning's cigar trembled and fell, and the cigar itself followed.
What? What?
Bogart chuckled nastily. And I'm the new director, be it understood. I'm very aware of that. Don't think I'm not.
Damn your eyes, Lanning. I'm going to give the orders about here, or there will be the sweetest mess that you've ever been in.
Lanning found his voice and let it out with a roar.
You're suspended, do you hear? You're relieved of all duties. You're broken, do you understand?
The smile on the other's face broadened.
Now, what's the use of that? You're getting nowhere. I'm holding the trumps. I know you've resigned. Herbie told me, and he got it straight from you.
Lanning forced himself to speak quietly. He looked an old, old man, with tired eyes peering from a face in which the red had disappeared, leaving the pasty yellow of age behind.
I want to speak to Herbie. He can't have told you anything of the sort. You're playing a deep game, Bogart, but I'm calling your bluff. Come with me.
Bogart shrugged.
To see Herbie?
Good.
Damned good.
It was also precisely at noon that Milton Ash looked up from his clumsy sketch and said, You get the idea? I'm not too good at getting this down, but that's about how it looks. It's a honey of a house, and I can get it for next to nothing.
Susan Calvin gazed across at him with melting eyes. It's really beautiful, she sighed. I've often thought that I'd like to...
Her voice trailed away.
Of course, Ash continued briskly, putting away his pencil, I've got to wait for my vacation. It's only 2 weeks off, but this Herbie business has everything up in the air.
His eyes dropped to his fingernails.
Besides, there's another point, but it's a secret.
Then don't tell me.
Oh, I'd just as soon. I'm just busting to tell someone, and you're just about the best... Confidant I could find here.
He grinned sheepishly. Susan Calvin's heart bounded, but she did not trust herself to speak.
Frankly, Ash scraped his chair closer and lowered his voice into a confidential whisper, the house isn't to be only for myself. I'm getting married.
And then he jumped out of his seat.
What's the matter?
Nothing.
The horrible spinning sensation had vanished, but it was hard to get words out.
Married? You mean...
Why, sure. About time, isn't it? You remember that girl who was here last summer? That's she. But you are sick. You... Headache. Susan Calvin motioned him away weakly. I've been subject to them lately. I want to congratulate you, of course. I'm very glad. The inexpertly applied rouge made a pair of nasty red splotches upon her chalk-white face. Things had begun spinning again. Pardon me, please. The words were a mumble as she stumbled blindly out the door. It had happened with the sudden catastrophe of a dream, and with all the unreal horror of a dream. But how could it be? Herbie had said... And Herbie knew. He could see into minds. She found herself leaning breathlessly against the door jamb, staring into Herbie's metal face. She must have climbed the 2 flights of stairs, but she had no memory of it. The distance had been covered in an instant, as in a dream. As in a dream. And still Herbie's unblinking eyes stared into hers, and their dull red seemed to expand into dimly shining, nightmarish globes. He was speaking, and she felt the cold glass pressing against her lips. She swallowed and shuddered into a certain awareness of her surroundings. Still, Herbie spoke, and there was agitation in his voice, as if he were hurt and frightened and pleading. The words were beginning to make sense. This is a dream, he was saying, and you mustn't believe in it. You'll wake into the real world soon and laugh at yourself. He loves you, I tell you. He does. He does. But not here. Not now. This is an illusion. Susan Calvin nodded, her voice a whisper. Yes. Yes. She was clutching Herbie's arm, clinging to it, repeating over and over, It isn't true, is it? It isn't, is it? Just how she came to her senses, she never knew, but it was like passing from a world of misty unreality to one of harsh sunlight. She pushed him away from her, pushed hard against that steely arm, and her eyes were wide. What are you trying to do? Her voice rose to a harsh scream. What are you trying to do? Herbie backed away. I want to help. The psychologist stared. Help? By telling me this is a dream? By trying to push me into schizophrenia? A hysterical tenseness seized her. This is no dream. I wish it were. She drew her breath sharply. Wait. Why, I understand. Merciful heavens, it's so obvious. There was horror in the robot's voice. I had to. And I believed you. I never thought. Loud voices outside the door brought her to a halt. She turned away, fists clenching spasmodically, and when Bogart and Lanning entered, she was at the far window. Neither of the men paid her the slightest attention. They approached Herbie simultaneously, Lanning angry and impatient, Bogart coolly sardonic. The director spoke first. Here now, Herbie, listen to me. The robot brought his eyes sharply down upon the aged director. Yes, Dr. Lanning. Have you discussed me with Dr. Bogart? No, sir. The answer came slowly, and the smile on Bogart's face flashed off. What's that? Bogart shoved in ahead of his superior and straddled the ground before the robot. Repeat what you told me yesterday. I said that... Herbie fell silent. Deep within him, his metallic diaphragm vibrated in soft discords. Didn't you say he had resigned? Roared Bogart. Answer me! Bogart raised his arm frantically, but Lanning pushed him aside. Are you trying to bully him into lying? You heard him, Lanning. He began to say yes and stopped. Get out of my way. I want the truth out of him, understand? I'll ask him. Lanning turned to the robot.
All right, Herbie, take it easy.
Have I resigned?
Herbie stared, and Lanning repeated anxiously, Have